Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Milzoff, features editor at Billboard and Broadway fan extraordinaire here. Before my guests for this week's podcast episode came in, I realized that it's actually been a while since I've seen a truly original musical comedy on Broadway. Many of the comedies that we see now are based on pre-existent material, which isn't a bad thing. There have certainly been some great recent examples of that, like Mean Girls and SpongeBob SquarePants that I particularly enjoyed. But it's not every day that you hear about a new comedic story taking musical form here. Probably the most recent one I saw was towards the end of 2018 when I went to The Prom. Not a prom like an actual high school prom, but the show called The Prom. The music and lyrics are respectively by Matthew Sklar and Chad Begelin, who have worked together for years on shows like Elf and The Wedding Singer, so musical comedy is very much their stock in trade. The stars, Brooks Ashmanskas, Christopher Sieber, Beth Lovell, and Angie Schwerer, are four of the funniest people on Broadway, period, which turns out to be useful because this show requires them to pretty much poke fun at themselves constantly. They play four Broadway actors, a stretch, who star in a show called Eleanor the Musical about Eleanor Roosevelt. You may judge whether that was a good or a bad idea. When opening night does yield the kind of horrible reviews that can realistically close a show, they decide that in order to salvage their reputations, they have to perform a grand act of goodwill that will attract good press. So they go to a small Indiana town where they hear a girl named Emma has been told she can't take another girl to her high school prom. What ensues is what I'd call a mix of hilarious farce, some really heartwarming poignancy, and especially for anyone who loves musical theater, a send-up of the kind of divas that we musical theater people actually really love. Unsurprisingly, it was a great deal of fun this week to chat with Matthew Sklar and Chad Begelin, along with Christopher Sieber and Beth Lovell.
Flowers accept the rain and grow more beautiful. Babies accept their mother's breast so they can grow strong. I accept that I was born a handsome man. So join with me and sing this acceptance song.
So to start, could you all tell me who you are and what role you play in The Prom?
Sure. My name is Chad Begelin. I wrote the lyrics and co-wrote the book.
My name is Beth Lovell, and I play Dee Dee Allen.
I am Christopher Sieber, and I play Trent Oliver, a former member of Actors Equity Association.
I'm Matthew Sklar. I wrote the music to The Prom.
So this is the kind of show with a zany plot that when people ask me what is the deal with The Prom, I find myself giving like a multi-sentence explanation. What do you all tell your friends and family when they ask, what is this show about?
Somebody say something.
It's really about these.
Thank you, Chad.
Yes, it's really about my life, Chad Beckman. No, it's about these Broadway actors who decide they need a little extra publicity, so they find this cause célèbre, and turns out that there's this girl in Indiana who isn't allowed to take her girlfriend to the prom. So they decide to go down there and change things and have a rally and make T-shirts and change minds. And, of course, they're so self-absorbed that everything goes horribly, hilariously wrong.
That was really good.
Yeah.
Still a few sentences there.
Yeah, it's a great show for hilarious, self-absorbed people. I've never heard so much laughter for self-absorption in my life, I think. Yeah, it's genuinely delightful, I will say, having seen it a little while ago. So I want to start talking to you, Chad and Matthew, because I know that you have a longstanding collaboration, but you don't do everything together, which is interesting to me for a book lyric writer and composer. Mm-hmm. So what determines whether a show is going to be something you do as a team, and why was this show that kind of show for you?
Well, I think we usually write together. I think when we haven't, it's just been because an opportunity has come our way. But I think that we really developed a partnership over the last 25 years. We literally started writing 25 years ago now. It's been long time. But we've developed such a shorthand, and we just love writing together, and we laugh a lot. We have a great time. And I think the one-offs that we've done without each other have usually been because an opportunity came our way that, you know, Chad working on something that already had a composer, or me working on something that already had a lyricist. But we kind of were cool with each other, you know, playing with other people.
That sounded weird.
That sounded weird.
Really weird.
Edit that out.
This show especially, though, we were in the middle of working on – we just worked with Casey Nicola and Beth on Elf. And, you know, it was an idea thought up by Jack Fertel. And he talked to Casey and he said, why don't you get this team together? So it was really – and, of course, Bob, who we did Elf with. So this was a special situation which never happens or very rarely happens, where somebody just says, hey, I have this great idea and I think you guys should write it. So it was mm-hmm. a blessing. But usually for us, we always write score together for book. I was asked originally to do the book for Elf, and I just said, I see the musical, but I just can't see what act two is and what. So it sort of depends on what's needed at the time.
Mm-hmm. So what ultimately sold you on this story being a good idea for a musical comedy?
It sort of it screamed comedy, but it also had such an important heart to it. And I think that's one thing that surprises people. They come in and it starts so, you know, with so much comedy, and at the end you're crying because you've actually been touched and you've seen people change on both sides of the debate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like everyone here is a veteran of musical comedy in some way, and I've certainly seen the two of you in different shows over the years and enjoyed them very much. You particularly in Into the Woods, Christopher, I have to say. This is like one of the things that stuck with me over many years of seeing shows.
Oh, cool.
And this is the kind of show that, as you said, it starts almost so farcically that it seems like it would be a ton of fun for everyone involved, both on and off stage, but it also might be hard to sort of rein yourselves in to a certain degree. So I'm curious, just from an actor's perspective and from the creator's perspective, is this a case where something that looks very free on stage is actually very tightly choreographed behind the scenes?
Yes,
yeah.
Or
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was asking the other day, I said, have we added time to the show? And it's like, no. So we are really, you know, it's like scripture kind of, and mm-hmm. what we do. We respect it so much. We're not going to go out of bounds with what we're supposed to do in the storytelling. And I'm glad you think that it's kind of
–
yeah. Because it is so much fun. But it is – comedy's hard. Mm-hmm. It's math. And, you know, we've all, with the creatives, figured out the best way to serve up this math problem and to get the results and to get an A on the math test. And we're still discovering that.
Yeah, we're still discovering it. Yeah. Because the audience will always tell you – you know, if you're doing mm-hmm. comedy, right, of course. but during the whole creative process of this, I mean, Chad and Matthew and Bob and Casey were so generous with us to let us go and play. So, but we've all known each other for 25 years, the creatives, and we've all known each other for a long, long time. So it was like the safest,
absolutely
wonderful room of fun people just for the common goal of making this great show that we have now. So it's very funny that you should say it looks kind of freewheeling and like we're just trying to make each other laugh. And it's actually not. It's really all scripted. I don't think we ever go out of bounds.
No.
Very rarely we ever go out of bounds.
No, because it wouldn't be funny, you know.
Yeah.
The comedy is so well written and it's so in our bodies.
Yeah.
So we respect
truly,
that.
Truly a part of us. Yeah.
Is it tempting?
Boy.
Absolutely.
That's where you're like, oh.
Absolutely.
But it wouldn't, because it's like a house of cards to the show.
Yeah.
So if there's something, you go off a little bit on something, if you were to, we don't, but if we were, it could affect a part of the show later on that the audience wouldn't react in the way
exactly.
that they should or even feel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I mean, the opening sequence of the show was one of the things that we worked on every single day
for
years.
Years.
Because the entire show hangs on this exposition of it. But it was to do it in such a way that people – it's a little confusing at the top. People are like, oh, I thought this was about the prom, but it's at an opening night. And then it all comes clear. And the entire – you can almost hear the audience go, oh, there we're going there. And then we've got him. But it needs all of that stuff. But we worked on that opening scene
many times.
Forever.
Yeah. How many songs? I mean, I can sing three right now that were.
I think we probably had six opening numbers.
Something
yeah.
like that.
But the opening number we have now is probably the 17th version of that song.
Oh my God.
Every day we tweaked it. We were out of town in Atlanta. Constantly, we were throwing new lyrics, but with the same tune.
Yeah,
and poor
thanks
Beth
a lot.
Brooks. Oh, and I felt so guilty.
I would carry lyrics in my bra.
what is it today?
Before I went on, I was like, okay.
They were down in the dressing room. Run this whole thing with me.
Yeah, we would run
the first scene every night until we left Atlanta. Until we left.
The last
performance here in Atlanta, we ran the scene because we're like,
I don't know if we don't.
Yeah.
And then you changed it.
And then we,
anyway,
yeah, then we changed it. And we changed, completely changed it from Atlanta to New York.
By the way, it's not fun for me because I was running out
of
hives.
Yeah.
I was like, how many times? I was like, can I work in chives? I've got nothing. So it was like, you know, anytime Casey would come up to me, I would just get the rhyming dictionary and be like, oh God, here we go. But
running out of hives.
I was like, can I do? But also the
hives. You're welcome.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we the great thing about that opening sequence and working with this cast is that we could just go to them and say, what doesn't feel right? What are you feeling? And that is not usually the case. And really quickly, I was working on another show with another director, and two of the actors were so just wanted more time and wanted more stuff. And the director had said, you know, you've got to turn this scene down. And they were handing out pages. And he's like, just run. They're coming into the building now. Just run so they don't trap you and talk you. So it was the exact opposite of that. It was like, you know, I don't have to run from the building because the actors are going to get a change, you know. And we could just ask for their input. And, you know, we're not up there. We don't know what they're feeling. So it was just great to work with this cast.
Yeah.
With all of the versions that this opening went through, was Eleanor the musical always the flop musical?
No.
Tell me more.
So in early days
this is
of the
good,
prom.
Though. Go ahead.
Yeah,
but
in the
this.
Early
this
days
is,
of the prom musical.
One of our favorite things.
Our opening number basically was the finale of three different terrible musicals. So Brooks was starring as Forrest Gump in Forrest Gump the musical. Beth, you were Mama Fratelli.
In Goonies.
In Goonies, the musical. And Christopher, you were
A Long Day's Journey into Night,
the musical. And we staged the end. We staged the end. And it was this kind of massive sequence. And we all loved it. But what we learned the first time we put in front of an audience is that they were unsympathetic. I mean, the characters were unsympathetic. So we didn't want to go in their journey with them. So we immediately started working on a new version, but yeah. If you want to
Well, yeah, it was we would see the bits and pieces of the finales, but then in between, the actors were complaining and they hated their lives, and it was sort of hard to feel sympathetic for somebody that's on Broadway in a show. So many people in the audience are like, I would kill to do that.
And we're stars. Yeah,
well, I think the way it was staged, they would be taking their bows
and singing,
I hate my life, I need a drink. It was like something like that.
So we were like, you probably don't want to spend 2 hours with those people. So it sort of got cut pretty quickly.
Well, when we read it on the page when it first came, because after every single opening or finale of said bad Broadway show number, there was a confetti cannon after each one of them. So after Gump, it was like the button of the number, and then a confetti cannon, and then we're the Gooniest Goonies in the whole goontastic world. Confetti cannon, and then Long Day's Journey into Night, black confetti.
So you were assaulting the audience
right at the top
with confetti cannons in the opening
number. Which is awesome.
Which is a strange idea.
We still kind of know the songs, which is they're kind of there still.
We should do the greatest hits.
We want to do it one day.
I feel like it'll be useful when at least the first two of those get produced, because I feel like they will happen. And likewise, Eleanor seems totally believable to me. I mean, what was the thinking into why this musical actually did work where the other three didn't?
Well, we decided we were trying to tell too many stories up front. So we demoted Chris's character to Gator Waiter, which was tons of comedy. So it ended up working really well. And then we just wanted something that seemed really pretentious. And then... You know, part of the fun is then hearing the reviews and hearing how completely awful it is. But we wanted something where Brooks and Beth could be together and nervous together and worried and, you know, then get their spirits crushed.
I guess Eleanor's story is not quite as action-packed as Alexander Hamilton's, but I figured if you can have Hamilton, why not Eleanor?
Is this hip-hop?
Yeah.
I don't want to ask anyone to badmouth anything that they've seen in the past, but you've all been around for a while. Have you seen the equivalent of Eleanor the Musical in your time on this theatrical earth?
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
I probably have been in many Eleanor.
Musicals are hard.
They're hard to do.
Well, you know, the best of intentions go in interesting directions, I guess.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I mean, these, as you said, everything is very tightly written in the show, but your parts are obviously so well tailored to you as comedians and the other stars who are not here as well. How much of the writing went into what you knew about Beth and about Christopher and their particular styles? And I'm also curious whether, since you have this longstanding relationship, was the writing collaborative in any way? Or?
I think we always had their voices in our mind, even when we were starting to write it in early days. They didn't even know about it.
Which never happens, by the way.
Because, you know, the Bob, Chad, Casey, and I, you know, would sit in a room and brainstorm, and we're like, I think this would be great for Beth. I think this would be great for Brooks, and then Chris and Angie. And we knew them all so well. I mean, I remember going up to Chris at the gym. We go to the same gym and saying, like, what's your money note? And he didn't quite know what I was talking about, but I was writing a song for him. I was writing Love Thy Neighbor for him, and I just wanted to make sure it climaxed, you know, the peak of the number was in the right place for him. And Beth, you know, I was a rehearsal pianist at 42nd Street, and we go way back, so I heard her sing that show a million times. And so I know their voices so well that it always wasn't – it's so helpful to have the person that's going to ultimately sing it. So you can really, you know, really create it for them.
I met Matthew at Paper Mill Playhouse. You were the
In the 90s,
you were the rehearsal pianist or the second piano on Peter
Pan? Assistant conductor, rehearsal pianist for Peter Pan at the Paper Mill Playhouse.
It was crazy. It was 18 years old.
Most illiterate.
Yeah, 18 or 19 years old.
Peter Pan at the Paper – who did you give a non-P-pop to? Right. Peter Pan at the Paper Mill Playhouse.
Watch the plosives.
Is it – I mean, as an actor, I wonder if it's like just too delicious an opportunity to be able to almost send up yourself. But what is that – what is that experience like? Is it harder than it seems, or is it nothing but fun?
When you read it and you were going through it, I was like, hey, come on. But then there is – I based a lot of Trent on a lot of people that I know, and I just – there are certain aspects where if that person does come to see the show, which I think they may have already, I hope they don't go, hey. But there are a few things that I think Chad and Bob put in about me that are like, oh, okay. I'll face the truth. It's fine.
I think it's a very, very short click of the dial between Beth and Dee Dee.
Yeah.
And I find that a compliment, actually. Dee Dee is, I've said it before, kind of like my evil twin. She has no edit button. And she's sometimes what Beth wishes she could be sometimes. So it's like, let Dee Dee talk. Dee Dee could actually tell you that, where Beth goes, no, I don't want to just think about me or hurt your feelings. Dee Dee has no problem with that. So it's really fun. It's really fun to be Dee Dee.
Yeah, it's enjoyable for us all too. Well, I have to say, obviously, there is a very heartwarming story at the center of this show, but it made me think a lot about what the experience is of being involved in a flop. I strongly feel that no matter how good or bad a show I go to is, I always like stand to clap at the end because I'm always like, it's not the actor's fault. But I mean, you've all had long careers and you've had shows that were hits and others that weren't as much. You know, what is from the inside when you can't just run off and save a little lesbian in the Midwest, as I think you say? How do you deal with that? And how do you kind of get through a show when you know the good reviews were not there?
Tough.
Nothing's for certain in our business. I mean, all we can do is just create. That's what we want to do. And you hope, of course, you want it to be the most well-received thing in the world. Luckily, our show was very well-received by all the critics. And we, you know, blew it out of the ballpark. But sometimes, you read those reviews like, ow.
Yeah, I don't read reviews. I know a sense of when a show is not done well. Because there's no one in the audience, which is kind of the first clue that possibly something's not working. But, you know, I'm always proud of what I do and will, I know you do too, give 150% of commitment in my talent and whatever I have to make it as the best I can possibly do with what I am tasked to do.
Mm. Yeah, I've been involved in a lot of shows as a pianist, and a few of them had terrible opening nights. And I would say by one of them, by 10:30, the opening night party was over.
Oh.
It was over. Everybody had left because there was so much buildup to this thing. And we thought it was good. And then the critics just did not like it. And it was just such a terrible, terrible feeling because just knowing everybody put all that hard work and time and talent and money into this thing, and it just didn't work, and it was just so depressing. I felt so badly about it. But the show is written by some of the most brilliant people, and the most brilliant people have had shows that don't work, and it's just a reality of it all. And you just try to do your best every time.
Yeah, well, thankfully for this, our opening night, because of a snowstorm, was delayed.
By an hour. Yeah.
So by the time the show was over, the reviews were already out.
Yeah.
And I looked over at Bob and Matt, and they were on their phones, and they were tearing up. And I was like, oh, God, it's not that bad. I was like, please, God, no. And they're like, no, it's that good. It's that good. I was like, oh, thank God. I was like, I don't know. I'm seeing two straight guys cry. This is not good.
It was a crazy moment. I mean, we've been working on the show for 8 years. And because of that delay, the reviews were out, and my girlfriend came to me right after the show was over, and she was sobbing, and I got so scared. I was like, what? She's like, the New York Times is a rave. They said that you made him believe in musical comedy again. And I was like, what? I said, Bob, get over here. And it was just one of those moments I'll never forget. you know, and you know, it was amazing, amazing evening.
Yeah, Brooks went. We were delayed because we had this massive snowstorm.
Yeah, actually, we had no musicians or sound people.
Was it two or three musicians actually didn't make it in, and they stole musicians from another show?
Yeah,
we had a
bass player that was supposed to sub at Mean Girls, came to save us. He sight read the show, and then for Act One, we had no Read Two player, and they found somebody who could get there to sight read Act Two. It was just craziness going on. We had no sound person, which is why we really couldn't start.
Right.
So everything was pushed that evening. Yeah. So yeah. So.
And then Brooks went out to the alley to smoke, and then he came back and he said, "Well, the time's left us." And we both just looked at each other. We burst into tears.
It's very emotional. This one especially. This one especially.
Because when you finally caught up with me, you know, in the red carpet line, it was just very small. It's like, got great reviews. I'm like,
I'm sure that a good review is always a pleasant surprise, but was the sort of monumental nature of the reaction to this a surprise to you guys? Because I have to say, on a happy note, that I mean, there's like so much cynicism about everything these days, and I think especially from a critical point of view towards anything that's like silly and happy. So I was very sort of encouraged to see like what a positive reaction there was. I think someone could have taken a different viewpoint and not been into something that is just upbeat and has a positive message and is funny and like delights in silliness.
Yeah. Well, I think because the show has that emotional center, I think it balances everything out. Yes, it's fun. Yes, it's you're going to laugh your butt off, but you're also going to be really moved by the center of the story. And also the relationships that form between Dee Dee and Mr. Hawkins and then Barry and Emma, like those stories are really, and those characters are just beautiful. And so I think there is a real emotional center of it all. And I think if that wasn't there, I think it might have had a different reaction. But I think because of the heart of the show, I think that's why it seems to work.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. Fair enough. I have to say also that when I think back to my prom, and I want to return to that in a moment, I feel like what you remember about a prom, besides the people, is the music. And I wondered how much the centrality of music to a prom was what made it kind of a perfect centerpiece for the show.
Yeah, I mean, there are two worlds in the score, and there's the sort of young pop sound, and then there's the Broadway sound, and so we wanted to make sure that those were very separate, and those were, because we're, you know, there are two worlds, we wanted to make sure that they were had their own voices, and especially where they sort of come together, and in the end of Act One, where it starts with Barry, and then it's the same song, but it turns into a very different sound, and Matt can speak to that more technically than I can, but suddenly it just has a completely different feel.
Yeah, that song was really, really fun to construct. It had to be a melody and a chord structure that would work kind of in the Broadway kind of boppy feel for Barry, but then also you could take it and straighten it out and kind of have an electronic music sound underneath it, and it would still feel realistic. So it was a tough one to figure out, but yeah, going back to your question, proms are inherently musical, and I think that is definitely something that excited me about the story. And we wrote Wedding Singer. Weddings are inherently musical too. It's just like these events, these big parties, the music is such a huge part of it. Whenever you're musicalizing something, you want to make sure that it's something that the music feels like it's organic. So that is definitely one of the reasons the story popped for me when it was first pitched.
I have to ask all of you now, what do you remember of your own proms? And do you remember if you had like a prom song? I remember mine was With or Without You, you too.
Oh, as a child.
Yeah.
My prom was such a non-event. You know, I think proms now are a much bigger deal, like with promposals, and they're like mini.
Oh, yes, promposals are so strange to me.
That did not exist when I was in high school.
Totally.
I was dating someone at the time that really didn't want to go to a prom. It was like, you know, it was kind of a hippie. It's like,
sounds
not
really
going to go.
Yeah.
So I went with, you know, one of the guys in the theater, and we, at the last minute, it's like, let's just go. And I just remember we danced and danced and went home. That was it.
Wow.
I think our theme was Wizard of Oz.
Okay. fine.
See, you see how much of it, how him, it imprinted me. Not
it changed your life.
Oh, yeah. Who knew? So, but I remember it being fun, and I have one little picture that I can't find, because I'm trying to find it.
Oh, got to find that.
Yeah.
I grew up in a very small town in Minnesota, and so we had the prom at this mall in Minneapolis, which it had like this garden roof because it's cold, and it's so they had a garden, indoor garden. And there were all these ramps and everything. I went with my best friend's sister because she was super popular. And she was so popular that she couldn't get a date because everyone assumed that she had one. So she asked me.
Oh.
So I went with her. So, but we got to the prom and I'm wearing this. It was almost like Mr. Rourke from Fantasy Island. I was wearing this white tuxedo. It was all white. It was all white, I remember. And so we get there and I was so – I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what prom was. And I was like, whatever. I think I was ninth grade or something. And we get there, and the parents of the kids were allowed in the prom to take pictures. So during – on the I know.
That's
you can't
right.
see it because it's
a
podcast.
It's a weird, like, fishbowl
element
face
was
to that.
Like, what? Yeah. So the parents were on the dance floor, not dressed in prom stuff, but, like, you know – Vikings t-shirts and, you know, ball caps with their cameras and the big cameras back in the 80s with the suitcase camera, VCR. But they were on the dance floor with us. And I thought it was so – this is not what it's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about us and being kind of like dressed up and cool. And I was kind of appalled by the whole thing. And so the next time I went, I brought my friend Cricket, and we didn't wear anything expensive, but I told her to wear the most hideous dress you could find, and she did. And then underneath that, we wore roller skates. So we wore roller skates to our prom because I thought it was stupid. And,
that sounds like the most fun ever.
and then also, instead of a fancy car or a limousine, we rented a big Winnebago. valet parked in a Winnebago out front, which is really fun.
You were into innovative methods of transportation. I see.
I went to three proms. The first one, I was a sophomore in high school, and I was dating a senior. So we were going to go, and then she broke up with me a week before the prom, but still expected me to go with her, which I did.
Oh,
and you know what?
Awkward.
It was not that fun. And then junior year, I went with my friend and had a great time. And that was the junior prom. You're still in shock by that story, aren't you? And we had a lovely time. And then senior year, I went with my girlfriend at the time. And we it was lovely. It was just, you know, I don't remember what the theme was. But it was, you know, it was like late 80s, early 90s.
A night to remember.
Yeah. A night to remember. Exactly.
With a K.
Exactly.
Late 80s, early 90s is also like peak prom music.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember what the theme was, though. I really should. I don't know. It's gone.
It's okay. This is your punishment for being a sophomore who was dating a senior.
Yeah. It didn't go well.
I graduated a year early, so I wasn't going to go. But then a friend of mine, her boyfriend broke up with her. And so she called me up and she was like, is there any way you would come? And I was like, sure, I never got to go. So I ended up – but the funny thing about the prom was that I was wearing what Brooks describes in the show down to the tinted aqua blue kayaks.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. That's all
–
there's a picture that of me like – silver and aqua blue and the eyes are like, yeah. It's pretty, yeah.
You write what you know.
Yeah. Why stray?
Well.
You know?
That's amazing. I was just thinking, like, I feel like the prom cosplay has to become a thing. Like, do people come to the show?
Oh, yeah. They
already wear prom wear?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we had the Broadway con. Yeah. There were people dressed as Barry, as Brooks Eshmanskas' character, down to the flannel shirt that he wore, plus the yellow "We're All Lesbians" or "I'm a Lesbian"
right.
shirt,
right. Yeah.
The pants and the like everything. They were and I was like, why are they? Oh my God, they're dressed like Barry.
Yeah, and I saw a bunch of Emmas, and then there was a family, a wife, husband, and a little baby that all had
we're all lesbians
t-shirts and a little baby.
But dressed like Brooks.
Yeah, dressed
they were all dressed like Brooks.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
Yes, that's amazing. Well, if people are not coming to the show in like poofy 80s dresses, I don't know what we're all doing with our lives. Well, congrats you guys on how well
Thank
the show
you.
Is doing,
so nice.
And thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having
thanks
us.
For having us.
Each time I find a role like Eleanor, the artist inside of me thrives. I put on that wig and those prosthetic teeth, and now I'm changing lives.
The Prom is now playing at the Longacre Theater on Broadway. If you're a fan of the Billboard on Broadway podcast, please subscribe and write nice reviews and give us some stars on iTunes. Always appreciated. It doesn't take very much time to just click a little star. We are on various platforms besides iTunes, including Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. If you would like to talk about the podcast on social media, I am at YaDownWithRMM on Instagram and at Rebecca Milzoff on Twitter. You can always use hashtag Billboard on Broadway to express your feelings about the podcast, and hope to have you back next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.